Okay, well, so let me first start by thanking Gerald and also Ricard for organizing this program. And well, I'm sorry to tell you that the title of my talk is not as catchy as Planet Nine, but nevertheless, it tells you the content already to some extent, that it's an attempt to try to connect the physics of four-dimensional Pyongyang Mu theory to the CPN model. And this is based on the work which I did in April with Kazuya Yonekura, who is a postdoc at my institute, IPMU. And well, one of the nice things about the program of this type is that you can sometimes inspired by a talk and start working on it. And if you are fortunate, you are done with the work during your stay, which did happen to me. And I put out a paper which appeared last night about the anomalies, two-fifth anomalies of the 4D and 2D and the relations between them, which I might comment a little bit. But for the most part, I will talk about the basic story, which is outlined in this paper. So, well, of course, one of the big questions in this field of resurgence is that can you apply resurgence in quantum field theory? That's extremely a big question, and we had a lot of talks along these lines already. Well, of course, there are several different approaches to this question. But one good approach, which is good in physics, is that you try to start with something you know and start extensively, and then try to go a little bit farther and farther from the regions where you know the answers and you're comfortable with, and then try to go farther and farther, and then eventually hoping to arrive at the destination you want to be. And in this case, the resurgence is best understood in the case of one dimensions. So that's 1D quantum mechanics. And well, to be fair, even in this case, there are many of the mathematical statements about resurgence seems to be not completely proven as far as the rigor is concerned. But we have a lot of evidence in this case that the resurgence works. And then the strategy is to try to go up to higher dimensions, say, for example, two dimensions, and on the compactation and on the S1. And even this program, I think Mithat gave a talk about this S1 compactation, and Alexei was talking about in the conference, etc. And so there is a general idea of the compactations. And well, of course, if you just compactify an S1 in the most naive way, there could be a phase transition, high temperature, low temperature. But you want to ensure that if you come up with a more clever vessel compactation, you might expect that these two are smoothly connected with each other. And because this size of the S1 provides an IR cutoff, it will provide the weak recoupled regime in this 1D. And one of the beautiful demonstrations of this was in the case of the CPN model. Well, for the reason, I want to keep N to be the rank of the SUN, so here I want to be pure SUN Yang Mills, and I keep this N to be this N, and in this case, the CPN I have here is CPN minus 1, actually. So CPN minus 1 model.
Non-supersymmetric,
right. No supersymmetry. Yeah, in fact, also 4D Yang-Mills, no supersymmetry, and in fact, no matter, for example. And in particular, also, N is finite, so I could discuss N equal 2, in fact. In fact, most of the explanation I'm going, because there are some technical complications, so I'm going to discuss the case of N equal 2, in fact. But the story itself generalizes to SU N, general N.
Generalizing general
N
is very important, because there is no phase transition for finite N.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
that's right.
But there's an emergent phase transition. And so with that urgent phase transition, you need to be very careful with your boundary condition.
Yeah, that's right. And but anyway, my story will work for general N. And right. And then the clever choice in this case of the CPN model is due to Mithat and Gerald to use the ZN twisted compactations. So let's write the homogeneous coordinates of CPN as Z1 to Zn. So these are the homogeneous coordinates. So if you multiply by the same constant, they are supposed to be the same. And this Zn twist acts on this as Z1 and omega Z2 omega n minus 1 zn, where omega is the nth reliability. So omega n equals to 1. So, well, maybe I can write it explicitly. 2 pi I over n. So this is the twisted compactation. Now the question is that whether you can really connect it. Okay, so this is then you can learn a lot about the CPN model, but still a two-dimensional model. And of course the 2D.
Yeah. Transformation would be when you're going by period.
Yes, sorry, that's right. So let's call this. In fact, for the technical reason, I'm going to let's go this circle S1. Well, S1. And if you go around this S1, there is going to be this twist by Zn. So I'm going to call this Zn twisted compact S1 compactation, for example, of this CPN model. Yes. Now I want to connect this story to four dimensions for the pure SUN young mu. And it has been a very old story that there is a similarity between the two. The both has a mass gap, for example, and a asymptotic free, for example. And in fact, as far as I understand, that was the primary motivation why people are interested in the CPN model, or the sigma models of this type in general. Well, the other reason is, well, classical integrability of the model, which unfortunately is broken quantum mechanically for general n, the exception of CP1. But I'm not going to use the integral model aspect of this story. So since the physics is similar, there is certainly analogy. But what I want to make is that it's not to make just an analogy, but to make a more precise correspondence. And for this reason, I'm going to compactify this theory. Well, you need to compactify two directions, obviously. And the simplest choice is the two torus. So I'm going to call this A and B directions, simply because there are too many S1s. So there is R here. And there are S1, S1, S1. So in total, I'm going to have R times T3. S1C times S1A times S1B. Now, just like in this case, where you put the twisted boundary condition, I want to do something clever here when you compactify. Okay, so. And the thing I'm going to do is to going to consider the Zn compact to this. So this is a center symmetry. Well, okay, the notation, etc. I'm going to explain better afterward. But the twist along S1C. So if you have the four-dimensional PSU and Young theory, and there is this Zn center symmetry.
What means Zn V?
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes, that's what I'm going to explain. Yeah, momentarily. Right. So first of all, let's say you have fully SUN pure Young theory, and people say that there is a Zn center symmetry.
Excuse me. So you compactified CPN model on torus, right?
Yes. A CPN model on S1, right?
And
additional
two torus.
Additional, right. Two torus, yes.
So three torus overall.
Right. Three torus overall, and then compactifying the two torus.
Okay.
Now, the statement is that there is going to be CP1 emerging if you compactify 4D theory on T2. And in particular, the instanton solution of CPN, you can try to relate to the instanton solution of this 4D PIMLs, for example. Yes.
A question about the general strategy.
Yes.
So SUN Young theory in its confined states, look at the low energy excitations, they are energy dependent. The spectrum doesn't depend on them.
Okay.
Multiplicity of states. And this is a big difference with CPN, because the multiplicity of the lightest states, of course, is n.
Okay.
Right? It's a sigma model with no confinement, etc. So if CPN is going to emerge after quantification on T2,
yes.
How will this work?
Well, let's see. Well,
low energy effective theory. I mean, then how do I think about that?
Well, the statement I'm going to make is that there is the inst- well, let's see. Well, in fact, I'm not going to claim that, for example, this is going to be the exact recipient, but that there is going to be the question is, do we want to understand confinement here? And then for that, we want to understand how the center symmetry recovers.
But what I'm saying is, if you have a broken center symmetry, generically we expect that the spectrum the light excitation is not scaled. It is hard for me to see how that's going to happen in CPU. That's why I'm confused. This sort of at an early stage.
In CPM, there is no center.
Right. There is no.
Speaking, there is no center. So which symmetry you? I mean, how you also?
That's right.
There is a center.
That's right. So in fact, that's what I'm going to come into. In fact, for example, there is a right. So there, for example, there I said that there's CPN, SUN symmetry, and I turned on the ZN. Flavor twist. Here, I say a different thing. There is a center symmetry, and I'm going to consider the center symmetry twist. Now, the statement that the center symmetry twist, this Zn, this notation suggests that it's going to be the center symmetry along this S1b direction, reduces to this Zn zeta Flavor symmetry twist of the CPN model. Yes.
Yes. So Flavor center is being equated with the gauge group center.
Yes, that's right. Flavor symmetry. Which are you asking?
Does it mean anything physically?
This Zn?
No, I understand you reduced by hand instead of the entire group. You know, you had CPN is CPN minus one is has a group SUN. Mm-hmm. Divided by U1, but you say, okay, let me write the boundary condition which destroy the entire SUN and only leave the center group through the boundary conditions. Of course, it's possible. Another, by the way, option without compactification, you can take two-dimensional CPN minus one model, introduce the twisted mass in ZN symmetric way. Mm-hmm. You will have the same flavor center group.
Okay.
It is weakly coupled. Mm-hmm. You don't have to compactify anything, and it's by far should be closer to. In fact, it is closer to. We know that because you know what happens in certain Yard-Mills theories. There are these non-abelian strings supported in these theories.
Okay.
In SUN. And then they have on this world sheet they have CPN model and some results in the CPN model are in one to one what you have in gauge theory.
I see. Okay. Twisted mass and
No, but in this sense it's a different kind of complication.
At least it's a different complication.
Introducing twisted masses is a different kind of making the theory
I see.
But you don't lose
the optics is also different. The string is also different than compactification on the circle, right?
It sounds like that would be a different talk.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. That's something a different topic. So, we can discuss probably. Yeah, we should definitely discuss afterwards. But let's talk about this after you set up, right? Yes, that's sorry. Yeah, you're
philosophical.
Yes.
Yes. When I was student, say, around 1980, there were talks exactly the same type.
We
were studying CPN models as mini models for four dimensional PCB.
Okay.
Study confinement and things. And I suppose whatever.
Yes.
Organic properties.
Yes.
And I thought they always treated as analogs, as simplified.
Right.
So now, what is what you do now, which they couldn't do? I think the compactification.
Yeah, that's right. So, but that was an analogy, right? So it's fine that as long as you take any say quantum field theory with say mass gap and asymptotic free, etc., you can claim that it's a good analogy, for example. But I'm going to make a more precise statement. In fact, for example, the CPN. I'm going to explain in the steps, but the CPN, for example, you have to explain how the CPN comes, at least, from the 4D moments. And the CPN, in this context, appears as the moduli space of plot connections. Oh, on T2. T2 in this case is the T2AV, the T2 I was talking about. Right. So how does it work? Well, okay, you have a 4D Mill theory, so it's just the action is the F squared. And then you compact final two torus, first of all, and make the radius very small. And then, of course, you have to make the energy small along that direction. But the action is F squared, so it basically says that F should be zero along that direction.
But it should appear, for example, yes, to some equality of, say, certain masses, say, for example, let's say that we would have an energy spectrum, right, in both 4D and 2D, right? Then yes, it should be just, you know, kind of one-to-one correspondence in certain sense.
Well,
at least certain sectors.
Well, at least in certain sectors, in fact. Yeah. Well, of course, that depends on how you compactify and then what is the size, etc. But what's crucial here is in fact, so let's call this circumference of these circles to the ABC, etc. And here I'm in the region where this LC is much smaller than, oh, sorry, and much larger than AB. So, so in fact, this is a similar type of setup has been considered in various people, and a lot is with the twisted compactation, etc. In the twisted Eguchikawa, etc. But here, the little bit difference is that we consider the hierarchy of scales. So instead of going directly to 1D or 0D, etc., I first go to 2D, and then connect to this story, then go to 1D. So that's a sort of like two-step strategy. And if you set the radius of this A and B to be very small, then as I said, first there should be a moduli space for flat connection, as first the gauge field degrees of freedom along that direction is concerned. So that gives the CPN.
And the center of the CUN acts exactly as a favor symmetry.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, that's technically that's almost the point, in fact. That's a statement to make. So namely, there is a moduli space for flat connections, CPN, so there is a coordinate z1 to zn. And you have to connect this coordinates to the Wilson lines. So if you have the, so there is a, what, in the T2, so the A cycle and B cycle. And in the moduli space of flat connections, okay, what is the moduli space of flat connection? Well, it's F equal to zero, so locally trivial, but they can be global degrees of freedom, which are the holonomies along these directions. This direction, that direction, and they commute. So these are matrices, and you can diagonalize it. So they take values in Cartan. And the question is to how to relate these coordinates here to these coordinates. And now what is this Z and B? So the thing I was starting to say is that there is a Z and center symmetry here in four dimensions. And this Zn center symmetry is a symmetry which acts on the Wilson line operator. And the Wilson line operator in this case is the monodromy. So well, there is also a C direction, but for the moment let's consider this A and B direction. Let's say first you compactify the T2 size of the T2 to be very small.
So in this counting it's kind of similar to what Misha mentioned, right? Because when you compactify this two and LC is larger, then it's very much reminds the stream.
Sure.
Because you have one direction which is extended and two others are small.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. So it might be actually.
Algebra looks very much similar. Right?
Uh-huh.
And also CPM appears this way.
Yes. I see. Okay, I see. So maybe the story is much similar than I had thought. Okay, yeah, we should definitely discuss. But let's continue with this story. So so that's a moduli. Well, okay, then what are the symmetries, Zn? Well, okay, so the Zn symmetry, people say, is these days, is the, something called a one-form center symmetry. One-form symmetry, as opposed to usual zero-form symmetry. Well, that's a fancy way of saying it. But at least like, one useful statement is that the gauge field associated with it is a two-form. So the usual, if you have the usual Frobel symmetry and their usual background gauge field is a one form, but here it's a two form. Oh, sorry, yeah, two form, yeah, B2. So that has a consequence when it dimensionally compact reduced, because the two form when it dimensionally reduced might generate a one form if one of the components take indices in the compactified direction. So this Zn one form symmetry when you compactify first on this S1A and S1B generates each the Zn zero form symmetry. So these are zero form symmetry. So zero form symmetry. So namely usual growth.
Well, because it's kind of if you have a symmetric tensor in four dimensions, that is equivalent to scalar, right?
It's pseudo-scalar.
Sorry?
Pseudo-scalar.
No, pseudo-scalar, okay. Yeah. So I mean, this two indices and symmetric tensor, it's like a...
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe if you don't like this explanation, maybe people already knew that. So when you compactify, there is a center symmetry, and it acts on the Wilson lines.
And the less fancy way of saying all this is that the Wilson lines are local with respect to the other two directions.
Yeah. Yes.
And therefore, it's obviously standard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right.
You don't have to talk about one.
Yeah, that's right. So the Wilson line becomes the local operator when you compactify. Yes, exactly. That's right. So if you go down to lower dimensions, well, of course, that's correlated because the dimensionality of the particle, et cetera, is correlated to the dimensionality of the gauge field it couples to. So that means that here, if you compactify in the two torus, there are two symmetries. Let's see, omega, UA, UB. Right, there's going to be two symmetries. And that I call Z and A and Z and B, for the obvious reason that it acts on the Wilson line operator along one of the directions. So at least I explained the notation. So this is the Zn symmetry, and this Zn twist I'm going to turn on, and then I further compactify along the S1, and if you go along this S1C, I'm going to turn on this Zn V twist, center symmetry twist. So that's the setup. Now I'm in a better position to explain what is meant by this arrow, in fact. So, first of all, let's see what happens to the Lagrangian, etc. Well, so far, the only thing I said is that there is going to, I find from some moduli space the CPN, which happens to be the same as this CPN. Well, perhaps maybe I should explain the statement a little bit. And it's always better to take the simplest case. I hope people can see here. So let's take N equal 2, for example. And it's a moduli space of SU2 flat connections. So U and UB are 2x2 matrices. So you can take some coordinates to be, and then because they commute with each other by appropriate conjugation, they can be simultaneously diagonalized. And then this ensures that they commute with each other. And then, of course, these are periodic variables. Set A and B are periodic with period, say, 2 pi. So that means that we have a T2, two torus, parameterizing the moduli space of flat connections in this case. But now the subtlety is that there is a residual gauge transmission, Y group, which exchanges two elements. So that has a Z2 identification. Theta A, theta B goes to minus theta A, minus theta B. So you have to divide by this to obtain the moduli space. So you find very easy that it's a moduli space if T2 divided by Z2. And in fact, if you go to, if you do the similar exercise for SUN, you find that this is the T2 per power n, so the Carlton, divided by this, this is replaced by the permutation group, symmetric group of order n. Now the claim is that this is the same as CP1, in fact. Well, so the meaning of the same requires explanation. So the statement the same is that it's the same as a complex manifold up to singularity. So T2, well, perhaps I hope people can see here. So T2 over Z2, so you could write T2 as something like this, where these two lines are identified. But because of this Z2 identification, you have to fold it. And then there are four fixed points. And if you fold it, what you obtain is just this picture with the four points at the corner and the singularities. In fact, in string theory, people do more complicated, like T4 divided by some more complex stuff. But anyway, in this case, it's only four fixed points. And but the things are folded like this. So this has the two sides, actually. And this you can think of as a sphere with four points. So these are the four fixed points. And the four fixed points are right here. As far as the topology is concerned. In fact, the state is more like as a complex manifold, they are the same. With singularities.
But the metrics are very different,
right? Yeah, metrics are different. Right. So in fact, the metrics are completely different. And also, right, say, so for example, already you can already see what happens at these singularities. At this singularity, the simplest case is that both values are 0, 0, 0, pi, etc. That's the point where the residual gauge symmetry enhances. So Cauchon to the full, say, this is, if this is 0, 0, this is all identity. So there's going to be residual gauge group, SU2. So that's the place where there is extra double bonds coming. And that's certainly a subtle point. And because that's a, so that's the statement. And because of that reason, the moduli space route connection is not exactly the round sphere or the CPN with the canonical Finnish 3D metric you obtain from the 2D. But nevertheless, it's topologically the same. And moreover, in the following discussion, we are going to move away from these dangerous singularities. So so we don't have to worry too much about what happens here. But you have to keep in mind that the things are not exactly the same.
So quantum mechanically, there is no modular space at all, right? Quantum mechanically, there's a potential generated.
And... Yes. Modular space. I mean, what do you mean by
So modular space.
Yes.
It's not some special gauge state. There's no such thing as a modular space.
Yeah.
It's obliterated by quantum corrections. In this case.
Mm-hmm. This is classical. Everything is classical.
Exactly.
Yeah. Everything is classical.
Is
yeah.
Beyond classical.
Yes. Yeah. 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 In fact, I'm going to turn on the twist. And before even talking about the quantum corrections. The moduli space is gone, even classically, at the level. But that's what I'm coming to, but anyway.
If the limit where LC is much larger than L and E and B, it is still possible to have moduli up to, you know, if you say that LC is infinity, right? Then it's still two-dimensional.
LC is infinity? Yeah, two-dimensional, right.
Much larger than LA and LB.
Yes, okay, then it's a two-dimensional theory, right.
Field theory, you know, but no, I mean, it's
not a supersymmetric field theory. It's very hard to protect the moduli space.
I'm not going to worry about the protection of the moduli. I'm not claiming that. I just said there is classical moduli space, and even before talking about quantum corrections, even classical, it's going to be just a point, and that's the set I'm going to use. And then I can talk about quantum correction. In fact, that's going to be the core of the story. But yes.
Even A has an action on CPN.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, in fact, that's a very good question. And of course, that gives some fancy way and of how to see the CP1. And hopefully I have convinced you a little bit that it's a CPN and in general CPN. Now, of course, the crucial question is, how does this ZNAZB act on the coordinate of C? And the statement is that, maybe I can delete here. So how does these two ZN symmetries act on the coordinates of homogeneous coordinates of CPN? So these are the CPN, N minus 1, and the ZN A, and ZN B. So it turns out that ZN A acts on the homogeneous coordinates by shifting the indices, Z and Z1. And this Z and B is going to be exactly this shift I was talking about. So that let me write omega Z2, omega N minus 1, Zn. So that's a technical statement. And in this case, there is a theta A, theta B parameterized Z U and U V, and there is a coordinate, complex coordinate, or in homogeneous coordinate Z1, Z2, or the CP1. In principle, it's just a model sort of a mathematics to see how these things is mapped into this. that's a complicated story, and I won't go into any detail, except to say that if you want to write down these coordinates explicitly, the good way is to, so this moduli space of flat connections on T2, as I said, it's base boils down to Carlton divided by this n, well, n-dimensional torus. N-dimensional torus, modulo the action of the symmetric group. So let's write down this coordinate as theta vector also. And then you can define a set of theta functions. Oh, so theta, maybe this is not a good notation. So let's call it phi, for example. And you can define a set of theta functions on this torus, Zn. Well, and as you know, so theta functions, if you go under the torus, they change by phase, etc. But if you take the homogeneous coordinate, this map is, turns out to be well-defined, and it takes values in CPN. And in the case of the CP1 I was talking about, this is a two-torus. It's really a familiar theta function, and you can write down similar generalized version of the theta function for n-dimensional torus, and you can map this coordinate, and each of these coordinates is identified as z1 to zn. So technically, the verification of this statement is to write down, define the corresponding theta functions. And of course, the mathematical theorem, I think due to Louis Jenger in the 80s, is that that this is this map is one-to-one. So and then technically, the statement is that you can just see how it acts on the coordinate in this instance. And the crucial part here is that this is this Zn twist for Zn for the CPN model I was talking about. So that means that if you turn on the twist here, I said in the four dimensions, I'm going to turn on the twist along the S1C directions. C direction is the direction which also present in 2D by the twist by Sn. SNB, ZNB. But that ZNB is turned into the ZN twist transformation here. So that's the statement. That's the basis for the statement. That, well, first of all, I explained that the CPN appears from the CPN model. The CPN for the CPN model comes from the 4D Yamil theory. And then this ZNB twist reduces to this ZN twist. Now, what happens to the Lagrangian, etc.? So, as I said, this Yamil, pure Yamil's action has just F squared. And as far as the F component along the two torus, T2AB direction is concerned, then that's already taken into account. Because that's how I argued that there should be a moduli space of flat connections. However, there are other components. So if you take the 4D Yamil's gauge field, A, And then if you compactify along the two torus, some of the components of the gauge field become scalars. And in this case, there are two directions, so there are two scalars combined to one complex scalar. And that complex scalar has a kinetic, has action, has a kinetic term, standard kinetic term. And that turns, that kinetic term is turned into the kinetic term of the CPN model. So the, how it works is that here, on this side, we have the coordinates. Well, okay, so far here, if you just compactify, we have all the scalars, and that might take a non-trivial profile along this two torus direction. So from, if you regard it as a two-dimensional theory, it's like a two-dimensional theory, but with internal degrees of freedom, which are the positions in this two-dimensional torus.
But,
yes?
This kind of reminds, I'm not sure if it's related, but remember Hoffman classification of different fluxes.
Yes.
You know, when he considered this twisted, you know,
yes,
condition, and it was also related to the air, right?
Yes.
So it's,
yeah. This is the Tufuft flux, in fact. The Zn compactification I was talking, yeah, about is the inclusion of Tufuft flux, in fact. So in the terminology of Tufuft, I think that he would say that you turn on the ZN2 hoof traps. Oh, maybe green is not a good color for people to see. So, okay, I'm fine with the white. Two-hoofed magnetic traps. Right. So the setup is actually very old, I think. So what I was saying, right? So what happens to the kinetic terms? So there is a scalar, and the scalar has a kinetic term, except that that scalar has a potential, which is the square of the F squared. So that's a flat connection squared. But the point is that if you first solve the equation, the potential, and then you obtain a modulus of flat connection, which is parameter of the coordinate CPN. And that reduces the kinetic term of the CPN. So if I write in words, so if you start with the 4D EMU's kinetic term, or maybe I'm going too slow. Oh, okay, fine. Then it reduces to 2D CPN. So 2D kinetic term. It generates for the scalars. So these are the gauge field components along this AB directions, plus the potential. Potential is this flat connection squared. And then if you first solve this potential, that generates the potential, the kinetic term. For CPN mode.
But it would be also a kind of non-locality associated with this 2D gauge component, right? You still have two components of gauge potential, which you can exclude them, right? Because they are not physical. But then it would be something which is not counted with potential at all, right?
You mean the two components along this 2D sigma model direction? I mean,
that's right.
That's still present, in fact. So for that reason, I'm not necessarily. So of course, I'm not claiming that the 2D CPN model is exactly the same as 4D EMUs, etc. And that's already in contradiction. But the point is that I'm going to discuss the classical setup where they're in vacuum and then there is a tunneling between them by fractional instantons. And for that, I need to discuss the semi-classical saddle point computation. And for that analysis, I can set all these gauge field components along the CPN direction to be zero, and then take advantage of the other direction, namely the coordinates around the CPN, and then try to discuss the fluctuations around it. So that's the one statement. So the kinetic term of the CPN mode arises. So in this sense, it's not, but at least in this sense, it's not an analogy. It's really the CPN model with a weird metric you obtain. And we can also see what happens to the set angle. So for this theta term, topological term, and you can do the similar reduction and see what happens. And it turns out that I'm going to skip details, but it turns out this reduces to 2D theta term. The similar thing was done. We are not certainly the very first people to take this type of philosophy. For example, I noticed that the Michael Atiyah has an old paper in the, I forgot, 80s or 90s or so, where you try to regard the 4D EMUs instanton as sort of a CPN type of instanton with the infinite dimensional gauge group, etc. But anyway, for my purpose, what's important is that 4D instanton number is if you have a 4D instanton, it's instanton number 1, and then there is, of course, that means that if you look down, see that object from down here, it also has instanton number 1. So the instanton numbers of these two things are the same. That's what I mean by this. So including the coefficient, they're the same. So roughly speaking, instanton reduces to instanton. Well, I said roughly speaking because if I say exactly the same, there's an immediate contradiction. For example, if you just try to count the number of the moduli space of instantons, for example, in 4D and 2D, there is a discrepancy. And that discrepancy of the dimensionality of the moduli space comes from the singularity, in fact. So if I remember correctly, if you take a one instanton, the most instant one instant, the moduli space of 4n, but down here it's 4n minus 2. So there is a discrepancy of factor 2, and that's related to the fact that if you go along this singularity, there could be a non-trivial profile along this two torus direction, and there is a degree of freedom of translation along the T2 that accounts for the factor 2, etc. Okay, that's a technical remark, but the point is that at least, so there is always a subtlety associated with the singularity of the moduli space, but the statement is that, so I'm not claiming all the instantons can come from here, but the point is that if you start some instanton solution here, you can regard it as instanton solutions up in four dimensions.
So the last question that there is missing
yes.
Degrees of freedom of the moduli space
yes.
is concentrated around the singularity.
Well, at least that's the case for one instanton. And I think that's more or less the same for other cases, but the relevant geometry is more complicated. And I don't know the correct, complete mathematical statement, in fact. In fact, if you go to general instanton number, etc., then the dimensionality of this thing is much larger, in fact. So, and that's related to the question of what kind of singularity you have on the torus, etc. Yes.
What's the relation between the actions and the
Well, the, yeah, so that is, so if you have the right hand topological term, even the action of the, that's right. So that's also the same. If you have the one instanton, then you obtain the one instanton action in 2D.
Yeah. I didn't mention this action was like 4 pi or something instead of 8 pi squared.
But of course, you have to. You have to calculate it, in fact, right? So you have to integrate over torus and the videos and things. It's a calculation. So you just.
Difference is yes. This kind of yes. Area of sphere. Of course, area of sphere is different in 4 dimensions. Okay.
So there's some factors coming in, in fact.
Yeah.
Right.
No, the reason I was asking is I want to see a concrete statement of what is precisely the. Actual
yeah, but the statement is if you have start with the one instanton solution, yeah. And then it has the one instanton, and then that reduces to the sort of classical sum solution with the instanton number 1 in 2 dimensions. So there is a direct correspondence with 2 instanton numbers in 4D and 1D, so 4D and 2D. And then now, so that's for instantons. And then now I'm going to argue that persists even for the fractional instantons.
But actually, when you consider instanton in 4D torus direction,
yes.
It gets fractionalized from the very beginning.
Yeah.
So it decays in the dipole structure. How do you see this dipole structure?
Sorry, what
single instanton in CPN?
What do you mean by dipole structure? If you compact by instanton, there is a monopole instanton,
sure,
and
sure.
It fractionalizes into n compact sequences. That's right. So in fact, I'm not going to talk about instantons, but I'm just going to talk about fractional instantons. In fact, I said this statement because they explain the statement of instanton number. But the one actually I'm going to use is that there is going to be I'm going to use the fractional instantons in 2D. And then argue that that's something like a fractional instanton in 4 dimensions.
So there cannot be a relation between instantons different, but indeed it's possible to have a relation between fractional instantons.
That's right. And then I'm going to present, so let's see, I'm going to have the 15, 20 minutes or so. So, let's see, what I'm going to do in the rest of my time is to explain first in a somewhat two-dimensional language. But except that I started at 10:30, I think. Okay. Anyway, I'm fine as long as people are fine, but I'm worried that people might want to go to lunch earlier. Okay, good. So let's see. Anyway, so in the rest of my time, I'm going to explain why this is useful, in fact. So far, this is an observation about moduli space comes in, and there is a relation between the 4D and 2D. But does it help to understand the four-dimensional physics? And of course, that's a big question. And before coming to that, let me first explain the two-dimensional story, although that's my story, that's the story of a... But nevertheless, let me recap.
So you're going to run this backwards?
Yes. Well, let's see. Yeah, I mean, it's Yes, it's in principle possible. But for example, the metric on the moduli space, et cetera, is complicated. So if you really want to write down that this is the solution, et cetera, that's what we physicists want, for example. At that level, it's going to be complicated. First of all, we have to compute the metric of the moduli space and all that, for example. But I mean, but this is a calculable setup in principle. It's just, right, for the MS compactifier, et cetera, some of the KK modes, et cetera. So that's a well-defined question. But right, whether you can obtain simple or eliminate the answer from that computation, that I don't know yet, but yes.
Just to make sure I understand the statement, you start in four dimensions, there's a small t2, you're saying the low energy effective field theory, and you reduce the t2, is CPN minus 1, is that correct?
That's right, modulo subtleties associated with this appearance of singularities, right. Yeah, so the most conservative statement is if you study the moduli, if you study the instantons or fractional instantons in 2D CPN model, and then that in principle applies to the semi-classical solutions of the 4D Amiot theory. Right. And but I'm not, as I said, I'm not claiming the one-to-one map between the instanton moduli space, etc. That's for sure. But yes.
This fractional is due to compactification, or you are using this?
Oh, that's right. So in fact, that's where the twisted compactification, et cetera, comes in. Right. So in fact, I was advertising that the twisted compactification is important. But for many of the stories I said so far, as far as the connection to 4D to 2D is concerned, I'm not using at all the twisted compactification, right? So you just compact the two torus moduli space flat connections, et cetera. So now that's where the twisted the role of the twisted compactification finally comes in. You still have the moduli space, you can just compact all the flat connection if you have. If we just compact one of the two torus. Right. So now let's come to the role of these twisted compactations. But back in 2D. So remember that we imposed a twisted boundary condition where this zk goes to omega k minus 1 zk. Not 0. There's z1, et cetera, all the components. So this is a twisted zn twisted compactation. If you regard from take the four-dimensional viewpoint, it's znb twisted compactation. And then you have to ask what kind of solutions could there be. Now, the solution people found here, including the people, some of whom are in the audience, takes the form of 0, 0, 0, and A, and omega to 1 over n. This is a confusing notation. So let's call the U or something. And then 0, 0, 0, 0, et cetera. So let's take the where U is exponential 2 pi I t plus ix or something like that. Xc, let's call this. So let's take the coordinate with t and xc. So this was the s1c direction. Sorry, I deleted the whole setup. But let's call this coordinate s1c. And so this is, and then this xc is a period, say it's a period xc1, period 1, because that's compactified. So these are the coordinates r times s1c. And you can check that this is consistent with the twist you have. So if you don't have this factor of 1 over n, that's the instanton solution with instanton number 1. However, if you have this factor of 1 over n, it's a fractional instanton, of fractional charge 1 over n. And since this is a CPN model, it's a map. So this is an element mapped into CPN minus 1. And if n is 1, so n is 2, it's the two simplest case, say n equal 2, the target is just a sphere. And this is like regarding the sphere as a cylinder, where the point of infinity here and there goes to the north and south poles. And then as the t moves away, from infinity to minus infinity to infinity, it goes like this. But of course, there is a parameter xc, so it also moves in this direction if you change the xc. So this flow is t direction, but you can also move along this xc direction. Except that because of this power of 1 over n, it laps only the 1 over n of the sphere. N equals 2, so that's the half of the sphere, that laps the half of the sphere. And that's another way to explain that the instanton number is a half. So why is this? So this we call the fractional instantons. In general, n 1 over n, fractional instantons. Why is this useful? Let's see. Why is this useful? Because it recovers the center symmetry. So, the Frebel symmetry, Zn Frebel symmetry. So here of the CPN model. Let's look at the fixed point under this action. So let's like a classical solution. So it's a twisted. So if without a twist, anybody is allowed. But if you impose this twisted boundary condition. The classical background is going to be the value of z, such that this equation is satisfied as an identity. But each entry has different power of omega, so that n through the unity. So it's easy to see that only the way to satisfy these are having entry 1. Well, 1 or something. The something is equal to 1 because it's the coordinate of the CPN, homogeneous coordinate of CPN. At the kth entry. So this is an n vector, and there's a k component. So this pk. So that's consistent with this twisted boundary condition. And then these fractional instantons I was talking about, so let's call this ik. So let's say take this to be entry k, and then this is the entry k plus 1. And then take this to the k plus 1, or maybe the other direction, if you change the sign here. But anyway, let's see. Then this fractional instanton starts with the point pk, and then go to pk plus 1. Yeah, let's see. So if t is minus infinity, this is 0. So it goes to, right, so pk. I think this is correct. So initially, classically, n vacua given by these points, and these are points really. So you can you might be tempted to talk about one loop corrections there, but it's really a point. Now what happens because of the instanton corrections? So it's a tunneling between different vacua. Connecting neighbors. So the schematic picture, as is familiar with CPN model, comes in. So there are n vacua of the CPN model. And these fractional instantons connect different vacua from here to there, from here to there. You can also go the other direction if you change the directionality of the time.
But non-supersymmetric CPN,
yes.
They are not degenerate.
Right? Yes, there is a single vacuum.
Yes, sir.
A single vacuum in
CPN. Non-supersymmetric is only.
Oh, yeah, but here the point is that I have to impose a twisted boundary condition with this.
Are you saying that when you put twisted boundary condition CPM,
yes.
Instead of unique vacuum, it has n vacuum?
Yeah, classically.
Classically. But quantum mechanically.
Classically. Classical n vacuum, and that's, I mean, classically just solve the equation, right? So these are fixed. This is equal.
Okay. When we switch on quantum collections, then one instanton would not work, right?
Let's see. So, okay. So then, see what happens when you turn on the quantum correction.
No, yeah. Right. Because when the depths of the well would be different, then it means that
Instant or anti-instant. Okay, if you want to compute the energy of this state, for example, then there is contribution coming from here. Yes.
I'm not sure that in this way, calculation of one instant when you neglected this difference in energy.
Sorry, which difference in energy? So far, first, these are just the classic endpoints, and then maybe you're asking about the difference of actions interpreting different vacua, k. k to ik plus 1. If this depends on k, for example, and then that's going to be different. Except that, so these are the, essentially the same instantons, a fractional instant as you move away from a different vacua, right? So if you start with 1, 2, or 3, 4, etc., you just shift the entries. So they just, in particular, they also all have the instanton number 1 over n. So the action they have from one, moving from one vacuum to another neighboring vacuum are all the same, irrespective of value of where you start from, the value of k. So classically, you might think that you are stuck here at one point, but because of this, if you take into account the fractional instantons, then you begin to move around, and you recover the Zn symmetry.
So I would say that it means that it has an image because if you introduce this scale of energy difference, then it means that your instanton works only when the time is less than in your scale, right? Because you see, because then they started to grow up one to another. I mean, instanton and the instanton.
Okay.
So in this way, there is a kind of meaning of quantum correction. Becomes important, right? So
starting from certain quantum correction. Yeah. Okay. But I'm saying that quantum correction is important, right? So, but it means something more specific, or some more other specific. I mean, if you talk about the instanton correction, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So.
No, I understand that you still can introduce
quasi coherence.
I don't argue with this.
Yes. Okay. I see. Right. I mean, this is just right. So far, this is a story about the CPN model, right? Are there any questions so far? Right. Okay. Now. So we almost spent 1 hour, but maybe I can go a little bit over time. But sorry, I started. I forgot when I started actually. But,
half an hour.
Oh, I see. Half an hour. Okay. So we have. I spent 1 hour. So in principle, I can go 30 more minutes. I see. Uh-huh. Except that I noticed that Sasha finished earlier yesterday, so I might want to provide as much as Sasha. But
the impression is that we are trying to escape from talking.
Well, I see. That's another interpretation. It's open to interpretation. But okay, that's I take that as an encouragement or compliment. So let me try to, now that I have the authority to continue. And, right. So okay, but so far this is a story about two dimensions, and of course the question is how it uplifts the four dimensions, and of course the well, irrespective of technicalities, the hope is that since this is a story of the in 2D, but nevertheless, as I said, the crucial ingredient there is just n vacua, and there is an instanton connecting these n vacua plus instanton, and the instanton is uplifted to four dimensions. And I'm going to tell you the argument that's why that there is indeed an n vacua in four dimensions also.
Could you just tell me the result of the quantum effects in the two dimensions?
Yeah, so that's right. So because of the instantons, and fractional instantons connecting different vacua, you recover the Zn symmetry. The center symmetry. I shouldn't say the center symmetry. Center symmetry in four-dimensional viewpoint, but the Zn Frebier symmetry in two-dimensional CPN model.
Right.
And that's a sort of a dynamical restoration of the CPN model. And yes.
Vacuum
is non-unique.
Yeah. That's quantum mechanics always, right? If you have the general vacuum, unless there's something weird happening because of anomalies.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, that statement itself is not that surprising. In fact, we have a comment along those lines in our paper also. But since we have a finite volume, for example, but the point is that of course, the whole point is to try to understand how the confinement happens in the 4D EMLs, and they want to get the intuitive picture of why that happens from the 2D CPN model. And that's at least the thing I said so far is that restricted from 2D viewpoint, the crucial ingredients. Well, of course, there are all sorts of quantum correction and complicated quantities in CPM model. But the crucial ingredients is there is exist of n vacua as coming from the twisted boundary conditions, as well as the presence of fractional instantons.
Let me just.
Yes.
In the case of quantum mechanics.
Yes.
Zero compactification.
Mm-hmm. Then
we know that there
should be a unit
vacuum.
Right.
It's really dynamical.
Yeah, it's a dynamical effect, right. So I would say that the code is a dynamical or quantum restoration of the of ZM symmetry.
Expect
in any finite volume system. Right. So it doesn't matter about whether you twist or anything, it would have to hold it. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so this is on two dimensions. Then now I have to talk about what happens in four dimensions. And this is promising because, as I've been emphasizing, this is a ZNB up in four dimensions, and that's part of the central symmetry. So if you uplift this to four dimensions, that basically means that you have a central symmetry. And if you define the definition of confinement as a presence of by the presence of this central symmetry, it's an argument that why the theory confines. And you can argue that there is a dynamical restoration of the ZN symmetry, so maybe confinement by fractional instantons.
Would you call finite volume high temperature Mengel's theory confinement?
Finite volume.
Very large volume finite.
Well, let's see. Well, okay, so in the sense that there is a, well, okay, if I strictly take the definition I said, that it is a central symmetry, for example, and then I would say that it has a central symmetry and it's a theory confines. But that's a matter of how you define the central symmetry to some extent. And so we can go into the discussion of how to define central symmetry in general in various dimensions, etc. But the point is to really to understand physics, right? So if what happens in the, if you go back to the flat space, and the purpose of doing this is to consider some concrete setup where first of all things are weakly coupled, it works with finite n, and then also there is a dynamical restoration of central symmetry, and hope that it helps to understand the flat space limit, where the subtle effects coming from this boundary condition, et cetera, you might expect to be subreading because it's a large volume and then there's a boundary effect. So that's basically already explains how confinement can happen in four dimensions. But let me try to, because so far this is really a two-dimensional language, so you might be tempted to ask the question of how to formulate everything more in the four-dimensional language. So, and that's why this, then you have to discuss the central symmetry, etc. So back to 4D. So let's go back to four dimensions. And we have R times S1A, S1C times S1B times S1A. And let me first remind you the notation that this is the two torus direction, where I take to be small. And this is the 2D CPN model direction. Now, in the two-fold language, the magnetic flux we turn on is along this direction, BC direction. It's a little bit confusing, but two-fold flux. Magnetic flux. So what is the meaning of this? Well, so this is similar to the discussion I had about the moduli Swiss flat connections, but now I have one more circle. So we have three things, UA, UB, and UC. Now, Now, in the different language, the role of the magnetic flux is to make these things non-commutative. So, so there are three torus. There are a lot of combinations, if I take two, BC, AC, BA, AB, etc. But the tone of the flux, of the root magnetic flux, only in the BC directions. So that means that C and B don't commute. B, you see, 2 pi I over N. UA, UB equals to UB, UA. UA, UC equals to UC, UA. So this is the algebra satisfied by A and B, A, B, C. Well, I can try to explain a little bit how this relation happens, in fact, because I explained the twist in a slightly different way, because I said previously that it's like a Z1 twist. So Z and B twist along XC. So that's what I said before. And is this statement the same as making that non-commutative? Well, the explanation is that, so you have UB, and so you have a torus, and you have UB and UC. Now, if you look at this picture, you can see that, there are various things you can go on. And if you want to, so this is UB, but it has XC dependence, which is important. So XC is 0, for example. Let's take the point of 0, and then let's take the periodic 1, and this UB of 1, for example. Now, instead of going around here, I could go this way. So UB1 is the same as first go to UC. Well, if I take the product from this direction, other people have different preference. UC, for example. Well, here is the fact that there is no flux inside. Yeah, in this flat connection language. But because of the twisted boundary condition, so this Z and B acts on this Wilson line. So this one acts on this by power of omega. So 2 pi over N, UB zero. Now, if you like this, that UB as UB zero as UB, then you obtain that relation over there. Maybe I got the sign wrong. Depends on the. But that means that UC UB. So that means UC UB equals to 2 pi over N equals to UB UC. So this is what I had before. So here I just explained that this language is the same as the more Tufut-like language, where you turn on the flux along this direction. And it's called a magnetic flux because it's like there is a two torus, and you can formally think of it like a sort of a flux, making this B and C non-commutative. Except that here, of course, it takes values in the 2 pi over N. So it's a discrete flux. Now, we have a set of Wilson lines which take this form, which satisfy this commutation relation, and you can again do the job of how they look like. So that's similar to what I did for the moduli space flat connection for UA and UB, but now I have the three set of matrices. And I think that in the very old paper by Tufut, I think he classified, if I'm not mistaken, what kind of matrices they can take, at least for SUN. And the matrices they take is the form that you see is a clock matrix, so it's a shift matrix, like a shift all the way to 1. And UB is equal to, so 1 omega squared, omega n minus 1, and if you want to divide by some power of omega to make it determinant 1. So that after conjugation, these are the matrices. And once you have this, this UA should commute with both of these things. So there should be an element of the center. 2 pi pi. So I write as a 2 pi k over n. Oh, I just deleted that. So there are n things happening. Classically, so it's again classically, there are n things happening. Now the statement is that this so n classically n solutions given by this k. So k is modulo n. So there are n solutions. So it takes various entries in the Zn. N solutions. And in fact, this is the same, it's exactly the same as the pk I was writing in two dimensions. So in 2D. So this is a mathematical statement. So namely, let's take this thing times, oh, this I mean the identity. And this thing, so these are two elements. And if we commute the elements of the moduli space of flat connection to two torus, we just said it's at CPN. So you can map these things to a particular coordinate, so namely a point in CPN. And it turns out that point is exactly this this thing I was talking about. The n-classical vacua I was talking about in the CPN model. So this k is the demonstration, I mean, the 4D incarnation of this n vacua. In fact, the presence of this k is basically how we can obtain the Whitney index for the 4D superimmunity, for example. Anyway, so that's the 2D.
Sorry, how do you define this map?
Yeah, okay, so that's the map from the moduli space for flat connection to CPN minus 1. And the map is to regard the CPN minus, sorry, the moduli space for flat connection as taking values as a torus. You can diagonalize everything, and it takes part in the torus. Well, there is actually a symmetric group, but it's a torus. And if you start with the element of torus and compute the theta functions, there are many theta functions, and that defines the homogeneous coordinates of the CPN. And so that's a mathematical map, a very concrete map. I mean, the existence of the map itself, et cetera, is known certainly in the mathematical literature, but we write everything down very concretely in terms of the theta functions. And in that language, we have a well-defined map, so it's just a matter of computations. So if you see this matrix like this, if you just use that machine, if you run, it's just a mathematical machine, and if you feed these two matrices into the machine, you obtain some point, and that point is exactly this point. But that matches, that's sort of expected if you want to assume the consistency between 2D and 4D, because 2D, I said that they're always n classical vacua. And I said that also the case with the four dimensions. And it just says that they match exactly, but that should be to some extent, because the 2D model CPN arises from 4D MLs. So this is the part of the classical vacua part of the, but of course there are quantum corrections by fraction instant tones. And, well, the classical first part is that this matrix, well, so trace UB and UC equal to zero. However, trace UA is not zero. So this is a statement that the classical, the central symmetry is broken. Classical. And now I can go to quantum mechanics and do the similar game as what was done in two dimensions. And so you have this state P, and there is a corresponding state, classical state, specified with integer k. Let's call that the state k, for example. But just as in the case of CPN model, you can try to go to a different basis, Fourier transform basis, where the effects of the Hamiltonian diagonal is after taking into account the effect of instantons. So let's call this E, K, 2 pi i, yeah, I think maybe N, PK, K. So so this E is like a discrete Fourier transform, this index K. And so this is the and then there in this basis the Hamiltonian is going to be diagonalized after taking into account the one the instanton curve, the fractional instantons. And this plays the role of this well, this is I think known as the electric flux, the electric flux. And in these spaces, Zn symmetry is recovered. So namely, if you take a computer wave of this operator UA, in these spaces, is equal to zero.
So what is the tunneling time?
Well, let's see. The action is the fractional instanton. So to exponential minus 8 pi squared over the lambda, g squared n. And
so you're
right.
Saying that there's no dependence on either the cycle lengths or n in the tunneling time.
Okay, I see. No, well, let's see. Let's see.
If it's difficult, then we can discuss it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I do think that, let's see. Yeah. Well, in general, let's see. I saw that there was a dependence on the scales, I think. And yeah, because that's going to
be.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, okay, so let's see. Yeah, I think it's probably like, if you want to really make the action finite, you can try to compactify the time direction also. And then I think if I'm correct, it was more like the size of the time times size of C divided by size of A and size of B or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. I mean, you can liken the classical solution, just evaluate, right. And in fact, thank you for the comment. That's very important because, in fact, if you in general, the subtle thing, which is definitely a subtle thing in this resurgence, et cetera, and you want to use the strategy of adiabatic continuity, et cetera, is that sometimes there are classical solutions whose action depend on the, not quad of impact, whose action depend on the size of the compactation. And so that actually is important because sometimes you want to send that you first have, well, you can first compactify everything, for example, and then go to just take the limit, for example, on one of the directions decompactify or two of the directions decompactify, etc. And you are sending some of the parameters to infinity, and that might give the action of the corresponding classical saddle point to zero, which is dangerous for the purpose of the Borel summability and resurgence, etc. And that's a general feature, and that's called, I think that's a sort of a resurgence incarnation of the old problem in the finite temperature field theory, like for example Linde problem, etc. That there is a general problem perturbation theory. So indeed, there is in general a difference. Dependence of the action in the compactation scales, and that's why when you compactify, you have to be careful as to what order. If you first start with everything is compactified, but then you have to discuss what kind of hierarchy of scales you want to take. And depending on the different hierarchy of scales, you might obtain a different looking things. Well, of course, if you believe in the philosophy of resurgence, et cetera, you first compactify whatever parameter regions available, and then sum it up into a well-defined function as a function of this compactation radius, and then try to analytically continuous avoiding poles and things like that to the other region to extract it. That should be possible, at least in principle. But it's certainly important that subtle effects of this relative size of this compactation is in general important, and that's partly the reason why this story is a little bit different from, say, just the more conventional story where you just compact my photoras and with the discrete magnetic flux. But they tend to be take the order radius of the tori to be of the similar order. And there is nothing wrong with that in itself. But at least if you want to connect it to this CPN model and try to discuss center symmetry, etc., inside that framework, it's very crucial to consider the hierarchy of scales where the two torus first become small. And I hope the reason wasn't clear, because that's the only way you obtain the moduli space of plot connections, etc.
So yes. As long as we keep some hierarchy in the ratio,
yes.
Is
sure
that the
indelimming
is the decompact.
Yes, I think so. Well, that's right. But of course, you have to, right, so if something might happen in the process of decompact phi, I mean, you disarm it yourself with a well-defined function, and then you have to analytically continue. And because, at least the assumption here is that there is a center symmetry both sides, so there is no indication that there is any phase transition in between, etc. Well, of course, in principle, there is a small region in the parameter space, some crazy region of the radius where center symmetry is broken, the tiny island, etc. But that's very unlikely. So assume, because we at endpoints, the flat space, and so we have the Yeah, that's right.
For the same reason that symmetries never break in train of thought.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so that's right. So if you want to discuss the reality of the phase, etc., you have to be a more sophisticated description of what it means by not just the center symmetry recovery, but how is the dependence of the large n, etc. So what is the volume dependence, etc. That's going to be in fact, that's more like a physics question. But anyway, to make the story simple, so the point is that suppose that I have compute something at a small radius, and I still keep the hierarchy all the time, but the radius is small overall, and I compute things in analytical continuum, and then we might hope to go to the large volume limit, in fact. Because I keep the hierarchy, but once I compute things, I can also change the relative scale of the things, right? So. But the point is that you have to start with somewhere. Suppose that there are two radii, R1 and R2, and looking at the region R1 is much smaller. And this is, I'm saying, that good for computation. But there is, of course, the other region where R2 is much smaller, etc. And you can start from there. But at least you have to ensure that at some point in the parameter space, there is everything is well defined, and there is a well defined trans cities, etc. And for that, you have to make sure of some certain things. It should be weak coupling, but you have to make sure that there is no IR problem, for example, so that each individual coefficient and trans city is well defined. And once you have such a region, then you can try to explore the whole space. And at least that's the hope. Whether you can actually do that is a deep question, of course. Well, perhaps I gradually begin to wrap up. So the story is that, as I said, it has been a long story that the CPN model is a toy model for DMLs. But at least in my updated opinion, the 2D CPN model is the model, at least one of the models to think about confinement in 4D Young-Mingus theory, in the sense I said. And there are some interesting phenomena we find, that there are fractional instantons, which correspond to fractional instantons through the CPN model, and they are crucial for recovering the center symmetry by quantum tunneling between different classical vacua, for example. So that, I hope, you will give a general lesson as to the nature of confinement in the 4D MLs. Now, in the paper I posted last night, I did a consistency check of the statement at the level of the 2-Fucht anomalies. So in four dimensions, there is a mixed anomaly. In fact, that's what Yuya Tanizaki was talking about. There was also a related talk by Zohar in a conference about the time reversal symmetry and the center symmetry. So that's a four-dimensional mixed anomaly. And then you can ask the question of what happens to that after compaction in the three torus. And you can keep track of what happens. And in fact, the computation is extremely simple. It's extremely simple line argument, and then basically it's just a two-line argument or so. And then you find that the answer you find is exactly the same as the expression which Yuya was talking about. And that's the paper, by the way, with Norisuke and Misumi-san and Yuya. And right, so that's the and of course they come up with a different argument. So they just want to understand purely in 2D CPN model, and there is a Frebel symmetry, no central symmetry, and then you have to do something different from the four-dimensional Yamil's case where there is a one-form symmetry, and then you have to consider come up with a so-called inter-shift symmetry, they call it, ZNS, that's in his notation, and also from the notation for the conference, and it turns out that ZNS symmetry they are talking about is the ZN associated A cycle, in fact, in the notation of my talk. So here I prominently use the ZNB, so, but here it won't be democratic. What's the role of this ZNA, etc.? And it turns out that ZNA is exactly the symmetry they were using, for example. And so the simple computation shows that you can check the consistency between 2D and 4D at the level of mixed anomalies, which also gives another consistency check of the statement. Okay, so, well, I guess people are hungry, so let me finish this. And if there are questions, I can still take, yes.
In terms of running the argument from 2D back to 4D,
yes.
The story for Grassmannian models in 2D is almost identical.
Well, let's see. Well, okay, is the Grassmannian one of the weighted projects in spaces? Probably no. At least one comment I have, which may be related. Well, I'm not answering your question, but at least let's consider, say, gauge cube SOSP, for example. And then the modular front connection for SOSP, et cetera, in general, this weighted projective space. It's a various, where the weights are given by the dimensionality of the Cartan elements, et cetera. So that's a different geometry. Right, so you can still discuss the sigma model, et cetera. But I would say that's basically the same class as the CPN model, for example. But, right, so the Grassmannian case, yeah, maybe you have to, yeah, that's right, you have to consider, yeah, cook up some geometric setup where that Grassmannian arises from the modular space of gauge connections or something in some way. And maybe people know it, but at least I don't know right now. But that's an interesting question, right.
So one of my earlier questions was, what is the relation between the spectrum, the known spectrum of CPN model, and what we think should happen with allegedly confined phase of the known state? Can you comment on this? What is the...
Okay, can you compute the spectrum of the 4D MLs from 2D CPN model, or like...
Just as a follow-up, what would you expect, right? The motivation for it, just to make sure that people remember, in the CPN model, the low energy spectrum depends on N, quite explicitly. There's N states that are all degenerate. Here they have different twists, but it doesn't matter. And in the ML state, the lightest states, the number of lightest states does not depend on N. How do I think about that? If there's supposed to be an obvious transition and so on.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a clear-cut answer, but that's probably related with the why volume indistance could work at all in the CPN model, for example. I mean, you might naively say that...
That has something with the twist and so on, but it doesn't...
Yeah, that's right. But the twist is crucial for the story to work. Like, without story, it's not... Yes.
But you mean the twist excludes the four energy state?
Well, let's see. I don't think so. Well, of course, some of the statements remain. For example, that you have the CPN model down in two dimensions. For example, that statement remains.
And supersymmetry
would be restored
by the exact same process.
That's right. So yeah.
As far as I can tell.
Okay. Because it's finite volume.
It's finite volume. Yeah. So it's the same. You have clumps of eigenvalues tunneling. It's just like high temperature in those two.
That's right.
So
and
the reason I'm asking this is to really crisply determine whether you are in the same phase throughout. Once you go to finite volume, the only parameter you can dial to get thermodynamic limits, and you can ask questions like this, is
Okay.
Then, as a diagnosis for whether you're in the same phase, you look at n scaling of various things. For instance, tunneling times, more direct, crisp physical language, I would say.
Okay.
You look at the spectrum. What is the multiplicity of states as it depends on n? And in the deconfined phase of Yang-Mills theory, the spectral degeneracy, of course, scales with n. But in the confined phase, it's not supposed to. And so I'm a little bit confused at this point in this context.
Well, but for example, let's see. But I would say that the twist is really crucial. I would say. I mean, without the twist, I mean, there are all sorts of dynamics and coming, including the direction of the gauge field along the two directions, for example. And then you can but I don't know. Ultimately, I don't know. I mean, I wish there is a clear cut answer, in fact. But yeah, that's right. So.
As a question about scale hierarchies, so is the size of the SC circle, I guess that whatever
yes.
circle was part of the CPN description?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Is it big or small compared to the dynamical scale of CPN?
Is it big or small as compared to the dynamical scale of the CPN?
Or do you have to make an assumption about it or not?
Well, in fact, let's see. I don't think I really need an assumption in the sense that, well, is it? Let's see. But at least so far, the statement I used that there is a classical thing, right? So the classical thing, I don't have to worry. I mean, it's just a classical. You just solve the classical equation mark. And then the only thing I need is that there is an instant assertion, et cetera. And that's also semi-classical statement, in fact. So I have the feeling that I don't really need the assumption, but I may be wrong, in fact. Yes.
We have some statement on the volume independence of the result.
Let's see. Well, that I wish to learn from the experts here, in fact. But so far, let's see. I mean, my main motivation is to discuss the finite end because that's what the theory I'm interested in. But of course, in fact, this is just a volume. You can try to discuss the volume independence, etc. But now it's just so this is really the torus compactuation, etc., which is standard in the compactuation of Yang-Mills. But just the hierarchy of scales, for example. So I would imagine that the similar statement would more or less hold, I guess. But at least as long as there is a center symmetry. In fact, right, so you have to ensure that, in fact, if you want to really take the large end, you have to, as Alexei was saying, you have to ensure what it means by preservation center symmetry, et cetera. I mean, because you have to keep track of the large independence, in fact. But at least basically, the center symmetry is there. So I would say that the volume independence argument works, should work more or less. But there could be subtleties, in fact. And I don't see any particular reason why the hierarchy of different scales, for example, changes the story that dramatically, as far as that statement is concerned. Right.